Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. In the section of the 1001 goals found in part one of Thus Spoke Zarathustra, Friedrich Nietzsche is going to set out a sort of perspective, or if you like, piece of a theory on values and valuation. And we should be clear that the language here, although it's often translated in terms of values, Nietzsche is actually using the word good or gut, right? And he's talking about instead of Werten as in ascribing value, he's talking instead about, we could say, holding something dear, schätzen, right? Meine Schatz is my treasure. It's a term that people use for endearment. You might call a lover or a friend or somebody else like that who's very, very close to you, somebody that you treasure, right? And what he's saying here might seem a little bit out of accord with what he tells us in other works about values and valuation, for example, in The Genealogy of Morals. But I think if we keep in mind that Nietzsche, although he has Zarathustra talking about all different peoples, he's not actually talking about every single people. He's talking about peoples that have some sort of, you might call it, warrior tradition or some sort of aggressive or protective relation of themselves in relation to the neighbor. And he tells us that Zarathustra has seen many lands and many peoples, perhaps, thousands of them, and he's discovered the good and the evil, the gut und böse, of many peoples. And then he says, Zarathustra has found no greater power on earth than good and evil. This valuation that we do. We set good over here, we contrast evil to it. And perhaps evil, in some cases with this, might have to be understood not as the traditional, good and evil as opposed to a previous valuation of good and bad, but perhaps Nietzsche actually has this good and bad valuation in mind. And he tells us that, and this is a really great catchphrase, evaluation, schätzen, is creation, schaffen. Values don't come down to us from on high. They are something that we as human beings produce, we create. And now we, of course, us late moderns, come into a world in which this process has been going on for thousands of years. So it's not as if we are entering into a vacuum and saying, let's create some values today. We actually have a world that perhaps has too many already tried out schemes of values there. But Nietzsche's talking about how it works with peoples, in some respect, outside of before the state itself, right? Völker. And he sets out a kind of story here. He says, man first implanted values into things to maintain himself. He created the meaning of things, a human meaning. And then he calls himself man, mensch, the evaluator, right? And he says, evaluation is creation. Valuing is itself the value and jewel of created things. So this is fundamental to the human being, this valuation, this holding dear, this setting one thing above another and saying this matters more, recognizing the goodness of something. And so he tells us that only through evaluation is there value, and without evaluation, the nut of existence would be hollow. This is integral to any sort of meaning of life that human beings have. So he says, a change in values, that means a change in the creators of values. He who has to be a creator always has to destroy. And then he tells us, at first, it wasn't individual human beings coming along and saying, here's the values that you need to recognize. No, they arose out of people. They arose out of the ways in which human beings were associated together. He says, peoples were the creators at first, only later were individuals creators. And then he has a little aside here. Indeed, the individual himself is the latest creation. The individuals who became creative did not think of themselves solely as individuals, the way we late moderns would project back onto them. He says, once the people hung a table of values over themselves, the love that wants to rule and the love that wants to obey created together such tables as these. And we're going to come to what a table of values is in just a moment. And then he says, joy in the herd is older than joy in the ego. And as long as the good conscience is called herd, only the bad conscience, only the person who's troubled says, I. Now, the creators and loving men, he says, created good and evil. Individuals come along, but first they're loving people. They're the people who somehow rise out of the tribe, the herd, the people, the clan, whatever it happens to be. And in some respect, they're not entirely free of it. They stand out as heroes, but they stand out as heroes of this group. Later, he talks about loveless ego seeking advantage in the advantage of many. He says that's not the origin of the herd, but the herd's destruction. That is when we get something like a transvaluation of values and things start to go downhill. So, what else does Nietzsche have to teach us? He talks about every people having a table of values. Ein Tafel des Guter. Hanging over them, a table, a registry of what it is that they hold to be valuable, what it is that they think is literally good. And he says that a table of values is also a table of their overcomings, Überwindung, a very important term, not only in Thus Spoke Zarathustra, but for Nietzsche's philosophy in general. A people is creative when it is engaging in self-overcoming, but also overcoming its environment, also overcoming the problems it encounters, figuring out it and carving out its place in the world. And then a little bit just right after that, he says, it is the voice of its will to power. Another key idea for Nietzsche. Everything is driven ultimately by will for power in his metaphysics. What there is of it, and this is found in peoples. It doesn't follow exactly the same trajectory in every case, and this is why Nietzsche says there's 1,001 different tables of values. It's determined in part by their responses to things. He says, truly, if you knew a people's need, note, right, and land and sky, and neighbor, you could surely divine the law of their overcomings and why it is on this ladder that it mounts towards its hope. So if we understand the conditions that they came out of, and in some cases this may be quite difficult if there's no historical record, then we can understand why they value what they do in fact value. And Nietzsche tells us a few things that we can say are our general characteristics. He says, what a people accounts hard, it calls praiseworthy. Worthy of saying, look at this. This is amazing, right? It could be a musical composition. It could be bridging a river. It could be generating a great harvest and finding a way to keep it from rotting. It could be dealing with the enemy that is across that river and threatening to come across and kill all of us and take our stuff. It could be any thing along these lines. So what we account hard, we view as praiseworthy back then. What it accounts indispensable and hard, adding indispensability to that, it calls good. And that which relieves the greatest need, the rare, the hardest of all, it glorifies, he says, as the holy. And so we get a whole generation of values coming out of responses to the problems of life and the needs, and as he says, the land and the sky, the environmental conditions, and the neighbors. He also tells us that peoples cannot have exactly the same value, right? One neighbor never understood another. His soul was always amazed at his neighbor's madness and wickedness. Much that seemed good to one person seemed shame and disgrace to another. much that was called evil in one place was decked with purple honors. Why? Because they have different sets of values. So if you look at some of the examples that he gives, some of which we can identify quite easily, he says, here's four examples of these values. You should always be the first and outrival all others. Your jealous soul should love no one except your friend. This made the soul of a Greek tremble. In following it, he followed the path to greatness. Now, is this everything about the ancient Greeks? No. Nietzsche, of course, is giving us just one example of a number of different possible Greek moralities, we could say. But this is something that you can see there in a lot of ancient Greek literature, and it represents their ideals, even down to the time of, you know, the rise of Athens. To speak the truth and to know well how to handle bow and arrow. This seemed both estimable and hard to that people from whom I got my name. What is that? That is the ancient Persians. Zarathustra is the, you know, sage who reforms the ancient Indo-Iranian religion into what becomes Zoroastrianism. And according to the Greeks, those were the things that the Persians held particularly dear. Different set of values, different table than that of the ancient Greeks. To honor father and mother and to do their will even from the roots of the soul. Another people hung this table of overcoming over itself and became mighty and eternal with it. Who is he talking about there? Perhaps the ancient Romans. Again, is that everything of ancient Rome and their tables? No. But it is a different path of life. And then he says, to practice loyalty and for the sake of loyalty, to risk honor and blood, even in evil and dangerous causes. Another people mastered itself with such teaching, thus mastering itself became pregnant and heavy with great hopes. Who are we talking about there? Perhaps the ancient Germans or the Vikings, or perhaps some people in the Middle Ages when loyalty was so highly valued. It's not quite clear who he's mentioning at that point, but what we have here are four of the 1,001 possible ways of arranging values, of understanding specifically what it would be to have the praiseworthy, the good, and the holy. And so he tells us, Zarathustra has seen many lands and many people. He's found no greater power on earth than the works of these loving men, and these are named good and evil. And then the question is, who is going to fasten fetters upon the 1,000 necks of these beasts? Who is going to bring all of these together? The answer in another section is the state, but Nietzsche sees that as a problem, and then he suggests perhaps the Superman. That is one way of making sense out of this cacophony of different tables of values that comes from human diversity and living in social matrices. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.